Okay, hello everybody. Good afternoon. It's afternoon here. Good whatever part of the day it is for you, wherever you are. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to see you all here. It's just wonderful to see you. I'm very happy. You know, one of the things about this, I don't know what to call it. I guess it's a teaching. It's a method. It's a way of life. To tell the truth, the vichara that is sometimes called self-inquiry, is a way of life. And one of the very most difficult things about the trying to communicate the nature of the vichara and its power and its practicality and its wonder, really, its wonder, is that when we speak about it, we speak about it and hear about it, we receive what is being spoken through the filter of all of our understandings, all of our defenses, all of our all of the ground that we have gained in our life and have held or failed to hold, all of our previous experience, all of the ways in which we have tried to create for ourselves a personal structure that will keep us safe and available for the fulfillment of life's promise. We hear it through this personal structure, and it is probably unavoidable and probably inevitable that, especially given the fact that for the most part we hear it within a spiritual context, coming from a spiritual practice or a spiritual understanding, it is very difficult to hear this that I am about to say, which is that the vichara has nothing whatsoever to do with any spiritual practice or spiritual understanding whatsoever. The vichara is life itself, you see. It is not a new version or a new method or a new approach to add to, augment, or replace all the other approaches and versions and practices and so forth that we have so painstakingly developed and built up over our lifetimes, again, to create and maintain this personal structure that we imagine is necessary in order to protect us from the furious danger of life, what we imagine to be the furious, fierce danger of life. Part of that personal structure is our spiritual understanding, our spiritual experience, our spiritual knowledge, our spiritual practices, our spiritual insights and states and so forth that have come to us and gone from us over the years, have come from us and come to us and stirred this thirst, this underlying thirst for satisfaction, for the end, for the final piece to put into the personal structure that will make it complete and whole and needing nothing more, needing no more attention. Our spiritual work, all of our spiritual work, is a part of that project that is undertaken pretty much at the moment of birth, at the birth of consciousness being aware of itself, is a project that began pretty much at the very beginning to find out what it is I am or what it is I should be, to find out how to become what it is I must be in order to be safe, in order to be protected from the fierce danger of life, and in order to be available to receive, as I said, life's promises. The spiritual work that we've done until now has all been part and parcel of that project, that the project of building a personal structure. It proceeds willy-nilly and ad hoc throughout our life, throwing up defenses to what seems to be threats that come to us, holding on to those defenses since we survived the last threat, shoring them up, understanding them, doing something about them. And all of our spiritual work is part of that same project. And the vichara is not. Vichara really is has nothing to do with spiritual understanding, has nothing to do with spiritual insight, although understanding and insight will certainly arise in the course of entering the vichara. But they are beside the point. The vichara is so simple and so not requiring, well, not requiring anything, really, that it is extremely difficult to talk about and extremely difficult to transmit, to communicate its nature, the essential nature of the vichara, and its simplicity, and what it is not as much as what it is. It's not a new thing to augment old spiritual practices. It's not a new understanding to either replace or augment old understandings. It's not a new version of the spiritual story that we have been telling for thousands and thousands of years. It's not a spiritual story at all. It's not a spiritual understanding at all. It is merely, simply, literally, the willingness to just nakedly look at yourself. Not see yourself, understand yourself, find out what you should be, become what you are, or any such thing at all. It is merely to look at yourself. At the simple, irreducible essence of you, which is here, always, never absent. And this simple, uncomplicated, just simple action will inevitably eradicate, will inevitably snuff out all of the fearfulness in life. The fear will be gone. I'm not talking about fear, biological fear, and fears that arise naturally that come and go and so forth. I'm talking about this underlying current of existential anxiety that suspects that I am at stake here, that's founded on the belief that I am at stake here, that my existence is at stake here, that I must be very careful about what I think and what I feel and what I want and what I don't want and what I do and what I don't do. This anxiety, this fearfulness that drives us from the moment of birth, that is the energy whereby we can continue this absolutely fruitless project of trying to create a personal structure that works. And in relevant to this, I'm going to read an email that I got the other day, because the problems that come up in this, that the person brings up in this email are very much universal. They are very familiar to me, and from my own crazy attempts to enact self-inquiry and so forth, and So I'm going to read this email. It sounds really extreme, but it's not. Maybe it doesn't sound extreme. It starts out, "Hello, dear John. Thank you for everything. I love you. I love you too. Although my mind's not happy at all about the idea of writing and asking for help and suggestions, I felt it was a good idea to do so. I've been experiencing tremendous resistances to doing the work of keeping my attention inward, and the producer of these resistances is extremely fierce. My path took me quite quickly to the teachings of Ramana, and quite successfully I could abide within my investigation to some real cool and impressive extents. The mind, looking to keep survival by keeping my attention focused outside, is trying anything to make me feel miserable, and when I'm not repeating to myself that I am not the victim of it, as a reminder, well, I find myself taken into demon stories of hating people, fearing them, fearing their judgments of me, fearing their ego, fearing myself, fear, 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 hate, 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 judgment, judgment, judgment. Despair is lurking there too, as you might guess. I sense that the inquiry doesn't go hand in hand with fear, does it? Now, when I'm not too identified with the ego, the mind, well, I'm in quite wonderful places, being one with clarity and insights. But what I truly want is to know who I am. And maybe you would have, I felt, some suggestions to doing the work, to helping me do the work. I hope this email was not too unclear. I hope you got the main feeling of it. Not unclear at all. This email is very clear. It's a very clear cry for something. But listen, here's the thing. And this is what I mean when I say that, when I speak of how difficult it is to communicate the fact that the vichara, the way of life that is the vichara, and the re-entry into the vichara, which is enacted by the deliberate intent to look at yourself, that it's not the same as anything else. And one of its main characteristics that so differentiates it from all else in the spiritual and therapeutic realm is its lightheartedness. You see, the vichara is not about, what was it we said here? It's not about keeping your attention inward. It's not about holding for long duration some imagined focus on some imagined object that is seen to be the target of the vichara, the target of the inquiry. It's not about exerting yourself in any way whatsoever, except to the tiny little bit of exertion that's required to just for one moment, right now, as we're speaking, just for one moment, just to stop for one second and glance inward at you, at this ordinary, absolutely ordinary, simple, uncomplicated presence that is never absent, that is you. This sameness that is you. This ordinariness that is you. But just glance at it, you see. The energy that whips us into a frenzy of duty-bound effort to never have my attention deviate at all from being resting in this beingness or self or truth or whatever name we might call it by, that effort itself is part of the same old story of trying to become what I need to be in order to be happy, in order to be safe, in order to be fulfilled. When the truth is that you already are everything you have ever wanted. And if that is the truth, then all the efforts to make yourself something different, i.e. the one who can hold attention undeviatingly on the reality of being or anything of that nature, then that very effort is just part and parcel of the same old project of construction, the same old construction project, the same old project to construct and maintain and keep modern a personal structure that's safe for me. But the vichara, you see, is what you are. The vichara is itself this life. It is the upwelling of manifestation, the upwelling of creation, which arises as a because of the impossibility for reality not to look at itself. And looking at yourself is looking at this vichara, which itself is the looking at things, creation, reality, in all its infinite glory of insanity and sanity and clarity and confusion and beauty and ugliness and love and hate and drama and so forth. Just to look. Not to see even, not to understand even, just to look. Now in the beginning, one who enters this wonderland of the truth, of the reality of things, in the beginning, and I'm speaking from my own experience, the person who wrote this is very dear to my heart because he comes close to being as crazy as I was about this. Not that close, but at least in the same ballpark of craziness that I entered in when I first, out of desperation, determined to know what it was that Ramana was offering. And in the beginning, it can be very likely, it can be possible and even likely that one will think that there's this deep-seated absolute necessity for me to exert myself until I fall down dead if need be, in order to hold my attention on this which is the object of all desiring, this reality, this me, this presence, this permanence, this unchanging certainty of being. I did. I tried. I thought that that's what was required of me because all I knew was to figure out what's required of me so that this misery can end. That was the construction project. That's the reason underlying the construction project, the construction of personal structure. So I tried very hard, and it didn't do me any good, except that it did, because you see, even when you're doing it wrong, there are these passing moments that you don't even notice. And the reason you don't notice them is because what you're looking at when you are looking at the vichara, what you're looking at when you're looking at you, is what you're always seeing anyway. The background of everything. So it's easy in a second's flash by to completely miss what's always here, to completely not even suspect that that's actually what it is you're looking to look at. It's to be expected. But whether you know it's happening or don't know it's happening, see it happening or don't see it happening, when you make this exertion, even when it's the craziness exertion, which is absolutely in the opposite, seems to be absolutely in the opposite direction of the vichara, when you're making this effort, you are, in fact, from time to time, inadvertently, looking at yourself. And that's all it takes. It takes time. And I suspect it might take more time for those who, like me, make a big drama out of it. But it takes time. But it's the looking that counts. It doesn't even matter if you know you're looking, as long as it is part of your effort to look at yourself. It's the looking that counts. And it's very fleeting. The moments when this effort results in the apperception, the conscious apperception of this underlying reality that's always here. It can be very fleeting. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't in any way diminish its power. Nothing can diminish its power, to tell the truth. It's the looking. So the only difference, so far as I can tell, between doing this the right way and doing this the wrong way is that doing it the wrong way, by which I mean doing it with the great energetic determination to do it right and to never let go of it and to always have your attention focused on what you are, which is never absent. The only difference between doing it that way and doing it with just total lightheartedness, where whenever it occurs to you, you merely take a kind of a sideways glance at this you that's here all the time. The outcome is going to be the same in either case. The only difference is that those of us who, like me, make a big drama out of it are going to be more miserable about it, are going to have a period of time when we are miserable and think we're doing it wrong. And think we'll never get it. And honoring those thoughts and attending to them and following them and stroking them and trying to get rid of them and trying to make them right. And, you know, the whole details of the construction project. And those that take it more lightheartedly and just really hear what it is I'm saying, which is this need be only when it occurs to you naturally to do so. Just when it occurs to you naturally to do so, take a second and look at the fact that you're here. Take a half a second and look at the certainty that you are. And short of God, attention will, you know, attention's its main job is the construction project. So short of God, attention will slip away back into the outside story, back into the maintenance and modernization of the personal structure. That's going to happen. It's going to happen whether you're lighthearted about it or heavy-hearted about it. Attention doesn't stay there. But it doesn't matter. Because here's the fact. If you will do this, if you will just do this, without regard to whether you agree with it, understand it, don't understand it, love it, hate it, if you will just do this, whenever you can, whenever it naturally occurs to you to do so, stop for just 1 second and look at yourself. Just for a second. You will see two things. Here are the two outcomes of this. One is that, again, whether you do it lightheartedly or heavyheartedly, the vichara will continue. The effort to look at yourself will continue. This is something that's reported pretty much universally in my experience. the effort to look at yourself will continue. It may continue as a duty and a burden that must be continued in order that you don't do the wrong thing again. It might continue as a lighthearted where, oh, wait a minute, right. What he's saying, am I here? Yeah, I'm here. I see. And then moving on to something else. But it will continue. That's really the soul confirming sign, the soul early confirming sign of the vichara, is that it continues. No matter what you think of it, it continues. And the second thing that you will notice, although it takes time to notice this, but the second thing you will notice finally is that the undercurrent of fearfulness and anxiety that drives us throughout our entire lives, that drives us into this feckless project to build a personal structure, that drives us into being good rather than bad, and trying to understand the difference between the two, that drives us into seeking enlightenment and self-realization and samadhi states and all the other things we seek quite justifiably, that this undercurrent of fearfulness and anxiety that arises at the moment of birth in the shock of the sudden awakening that is the birth of consciousness, aware of itself. This fearfulness and anxiety that sometimes is big and sometimes is just a little murmuring off-center wheel. This fearfulness and anxiety will go. It'll be gone before you know it's gone, literally. And you will see that all of the efforts to hold your life at arm's length, to keep a close eye on things, to keep a close eye on what you think and what you want and what you don't want, on your inclination to be judgmental, your inclination to be hateful, your inclination to be selfish, or all of those things that need to be held at arm's length and need to be watched very carefully lest they destroy the effectiveness of this glorious structure that you have constructed. This fearfulness and anxiety that truly, truly is the cause of all human hatred, human misery, human suffering, human aggression, human stupidity whatsoever. It's gone. And life, rather than being at arm's length, is you. It's what you've always wanted. That life, rather than being a dangerous artifact that must be kept under close scrutiny and close observation, is actually the self-realization. This life, just as it is the self-realization that we have sought with such yearning elsewhere. That this life, just as it is, hated and despised and feared and so forth, well, you will see. But the point that I am making here is this. It is going to be very difficult for any of us actually to come to an understanding of the uniqueness, the singularity that is the recognition of the vichara. It is going to be very difficult for us to shift and change our understanding of the world and of our place in it and our relationship to it and our personal structure and what it means and what it should be and what it should not be and how we can go about making it what it should be. It's very difficult to hear that this singularity, that is the recognition of the vichara, has nothing whatsoever to say about any of that. Has no fear of it, no hope that it will provide escape or freedom or liberation or any such thing whatsoever, or any idea that these things are needed. What's wanted is this life, always. But you can't see that, you can't talk yourself into that, but you can see you. So look at yourself. It's okay if we think of the vichara as one more version of the same old spiritual story. It's okay. If we do it, it won't matter. It's okay if we think of the vichara as something that is, that my life depends upon me doing it right, and I have to be very careful. I have to watch the arising of old things of fear and hate and judgment and worry about them and do something about them and make them go away. That's okay. That can't hurt you any more than fear and hatred and judgment can hurt you. Any more than thought can hurt you. But I think that it would be a lot easier if you just asked yourself this: what's the basis for thinking that all of that's necessary? What's your basis? Who told you that you have to worry about thoughts of fearfulness and judgment and hatred? Who told you that? And then look at yourself. That's all that's needed. Just look at yourself. Now. And again then. And again then. And everything will be taken care of. Okay? You know, I've only been doing this for 10 years, so it takes me, and I'm a very slow learner, and it's taken me a while to come to see this, but I've finally come to see that after I finish speaking, it often takes a while for anybody to have anything to say, and that's quite all right. I'm just going to sit here and wait until somebody contacts Carla and tells them that they want to speak with me, if anybody does. Okay? Laurent? Hello?
Yes. Well, I guess you can hear me because I see the button. And I want to, from the depth of my heart, I want to thank you for this answer. This was my mail. And thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Is it helpful, what I had to say?
Yes. Yes, it is very helpful. The mind is, it's true that the mind is, I mean, this is your last point again, really made it home. Like, who told me that I had to worry about these thoughts, these fears, and this, and it's true. It's the whole structure of wanting to be good and be careful and etc. And that taken into that whole idea of I need to change my life and make my life better and be that hero of my dream and stuff. And then back to, and you're very right, it's been 4 years now, so for 4 years that the vichara is continuing on by itself, by the way. But is that, I'm just letting go of worrying so much. Thank you.
Well, that would be very wonderful. You know, you mentioned something about Jesus Christ in the teaching of Christ in your email. And I have to tell you that from my point of view, this aspect of the vichara, which is its lightheartedness, which is its disregard for the goodness or badness of the personal structure, It's the absolute irrelevance of bad thoughts and good thoughts and righteous thoughts and sinful thoughts and so forth, that this aspect of the vichara is precisely what gave rise, what to me is the core insight of Jesus, which is the absolute, radical, unconditional, ever-present, universal forgiveness. The universal recognition that our sins, our stupidity, our mistakes, our misunderstandings are beside the point. So, it's good to talk to you. Is anything else?
Yes, actually, just commenting on this, of course, it's the same, everybody talks, and Jesus included, of the same Rome, yes, the same home, which is Rome. All the roads lead to Rome. And yes, the sins, the guilt, the fear, all of that is just nonsense. Now, the way that I actually teach, by the way, is the way of the Holy Spirit in this sense. The idea of very close to bhakti, very close to looking very carefully at the ego and all of that crooked thought system, and somehow accepting the other thought system, the thought system of oneness, which you call, I think, insight and clarity. And of course, it's just wonderful. It's like, but for me now, mixing the two with the Ramana is the voice of that that comes to talk to me, that comes to awaken. And it's a very powerful path as well, in the fact that you use everything. Christ uses everything that is seen, and everything starts to talk to you and pointing you into what Ramana is. It's like everything points to you. But the only thing was maybe the idea of replacing, of accepting the atonement, as I said, the Course in Miracles, accepting like the correction of what you think you're seeing by another voice, by a translator, by the Holy Spirit, as it says in this path. But it goes to the same thing, obviously.
Yes, and you see, and this is an interesting thing to look at. You see, all of the particulars in the way that the teachings of Christ are spoken about or understood or incorporated, and actually they are incorporated into the personal structure as part and parcel of the apparatus that seeks to keep me comforted and safe and so forth. But all of those but that's true of all spiritual and religious teachings. It's not just the teachings of Christ, but that all beings who have had the great good luck in human life to recognize the essential I hate to use a word like this, but the essential holiness of life, the wholeness of life, all beings who have had the great good luck to fall into the actuality of the vichara, the river of creation that is the vichara. They all try to speak about it, and they all use whatever concepts, vocabularies, ideas, principles, and so forth that come to hand in their own life, in their own training, in their own vocabulary. And what is called the Holy Spirit in Christian teachings is called you, for me. You know, and truly, that's exactly what I if I were speaking about the Holy Spirit, I would call the Holy Spirit you. And when I'm speaking to you, and when I'm speaking of you, and when I am encouraging you, and when I am begging you, and when I am praying that you will be free, will see the essential freedom that is your nature, I am speaking to the Holy Spirit, speaking to you. And in other realms and in other traditions and in other religions and in other spiritual contexts, there's a whole different vocabulary that arises. But that vocabulary, all of the things that we have tried to do to try to move the project of finding safety and security and fulfillment and satisfaction and goodness in our lives, I don't remember what I was going to say when I started that sentence, but in any event, do you follow what I'm saying, sort of?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And of course, it is, as I see it, the as I mix both, because I think I'm kind of faithful to those two paths, the Holy Spirit would be like the voice, my voice, that comes to not only, I mean, the comforter, yes, but it's my voice talking. So as I, when I mix both myself, my true self, that space, eternal, transparent, sorry about the word, that is always here, is awareness itself and it's knowledge. So it has a voice as well. It just sees and knows everything. So it sends me his voice somehow, of course, when I think I'm separate from that. And that path, I don't know if you see it this way, that voice that is that I'm listening to more and more, that is not shouting, but that is lower, brings me back to the realization of that which I am. So when I ask the question, you know, who am I, is that same desire. It's very, I'm kind of mixing those two, but I think they go together somehow, and as you said, it's the vichara is just like direct and somehow different.
Yes, and part of the reason it's different is because the recognition of vichara is that the realization does not come to the personal structure. The comfort does not come to the personal structure. The transformation and transcendence does not come to the personal structure. The personal structure is inert. It is a mechanical device that rises and falls and changes and is adjusted over time according to the context and the forces that act upon it. So that in the vichara, there's no interest in informing or reforming or transforming or transcending personality or personal structure or ego or by whatever other name it is to be called, because the personal structure just as it is finally seen to be just exactly what it must be and just exactly, and that it has no life to it. It's not life. It is apparatus. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I totally do. And yes, it's empty, dead, nothing. And yes. The voice doesn't come to the personal structure. There's no changing of that personal structure. And I guess then it's not a path for absolutely everyone, that vichara. And other paths maybe are here for the same result. And I see that a little bit as the bhakti, as thy will, not mine. And then little by little, then I would realize that my will, my ancient will, was just totally ridiculous. It's just totally inert, as you said. And then I will then merge with that me that I've always been, somehow trying to put words to that. But I think I get very well what you said.
I think you do too. And I'm very happy to speak with you. Yes, I'm very happy to speak with you. Okay, anything else?
No, but thank you very much, and I love you so much. Thank you.
Likewise. Okay, anybody else want to talk to me?
Don, calling from New York.
Hi, Don.
How's it going, John?
Oh, it's going magnificently. And you?
Oh, it's going really well. You know, I wanted to bring up one thing. I spoke with you a few weeks ago. Now, it's funny. I hate when I have to work when these sessions are available. I feel like I'm missing out. Even reading them is not the same. That sense that I call that sense of Donness, that is the entity that has never changed since I was a child eating breakfast or watching a Yankee game in the 60s or during any part of my life, the part of me that's untouched. What I never realized, and it must be true, is that my Donness or your Johnness or Laurentness or they've got to be the same thing, if all is one. That Donness that I recognize is the same as your Johnness. I've been taking that so-called Donness as an independent thing, unique to me, when in reality, I'm describing awareness. And it has to be the same thing that you're describing when you talk of Johnness, or anybody talks about when they speak of that part of them which is ineffable, which is not subject to change or bruising or injury or anything else. It simply is. Am I making any sense here?
Don? Yes, absolutely. 100%. That is absolutely my experience as well. And the thing about it is that it's, you know, what happens is, right, that these understandings bubble up. The apparatus of the creature, this Don in New York or John in OI or Laurent in North Carolina, the apparatus of the creature is refreshed by the bubbling up of new understandings and new points of view on things, and its old ways are replaced with that. But the thing about what you're saying is so absolutely, profoundly the case. And it's not, you see, different iterations of the same thing. It's not like different occurrences of the same thing. When you look at Don, you look at me directly.
Yeah, but isn't
anyone? Go ahead.
Yeah, but isn't that? I mean, that's so fabulous. First of all, it's a built-in golden rule. I mean, I've read this, but it never meant anything. Why would I harm anybody? I'd be harming myself. And it also implies that, you know, we're all doing the best we can. And I really never had any compassion for somebody who screwed up. I would be, not all the time, but generally very judgmental, even though I did it myself. But if your Johnness is the same as my Donness, anytime I do anything negative or hurtful towards you, I'm directing it at me. It's crazy. Is that not so?
Oh, that is perfectly so. And this is the insight that has given rise within Tibetan Buddhism to the conviction that the main path of Mahayana Buddhism in Tibet is the cultivation and the cultivation of the evoking and cultivation of compassion, by which they mean to see self in others, because the seeing self in others is the essential insight that arises within these creatures when it's seen that when you look at you, you're looking at every creature whatsoever, without any exception whatsoever. It's also, it's a funny thing, Ramana once the ashram was robbed, a bunch of robbers, smash and grab type robbers, apparently came running into the ashram and grabbed some things and I don't know, whatever they could find of value, and ran on out, and the other people in the ashram were up in arms and they wanted to go chase them and hunt them down and I don't know, punish them in some way. And Ramana said, wait a minute, this trying to punish those people is like pulling out your own teeth because you bit your tongue. And yes, you're absolutely right. And the harmlessness to others and the recognition that we are all doing the very best we can, that's not something that we figure out. That's something that bubbles up within us, that arises within us and transforms this structure. It's part of the arising of things that transform the structure over time and make it harmless. You follow that?
I do indeed. I have to say, though, and I'm not trying to get esoteric here in any way. I mean, all my life, has been founded on this idea. When somebody said to me, I understand or I feel what you do, I would say to myself, nonsense. I'm different. I'm special. How could you feel what I do? It's more than that. They are me. I mean, there was a nonsensical, constructed Donald running around thinking he was different from everybody else. But also, doesn't that tell us, the criminal justice system, with which you are far more intimately familiar than I mean, this whole idea of crime and punishment, or justice, or retribution, it makes the whole thing nonsensical, does it not?
Well, yes, it does. Well, of course, but everything is in context, right? Things are nonsensical or sensical in context. And in the context of a society that is comprised of people who believe themselves to be individuals with individual needs and individual vulnerabilities and individual everything, then the arising of the criminal justice system is not so nonsensical. The thing to see about this is, yes, of course it's nonsensical, and that's been very clear to me for a very long time. As you say, I have considerable experience in this, even from the social standpoint, from the standpoint of a society that is comprised of individuals. It's nonsensical because it causes much more harm than it fixes. But the thing about, one of the things to see about this too, is that, and like I have nothing, no, see, I don't have anything against what anybody does. And so it's not like I'm saying, oh, we've got to change and we can't be political anymore. We can't seek social change anymore. That's just more of the same old BS about how we have to figure out what we should do and how we should be and how we should think and so forth. And that's the route to freedom. And I don't hold to that. But I do see very, very, very clearly that there is no hope for sanity in human society unless sanity prevails within the human creature itself and the insane conviction that I am in danger and at stake here, must defend myself and become what I should be and not what I should not be. And when that is expunged, when that is snuffed out, as it is for you and it is for many now, when that is snuffed out, then for all, then society naturally, just as the personal structure naturally relaxes itself and changes its whole, you know, and it just becomes sweeter, so too will human society, because human society reflects human individual misery and pain and suffering. And it's only when that individual human misery, pain, and suffering is snuffed out that the same aspects writ large in the social venue will also be snuffed out. And which is, of course, what brings me to this work and what makes this work so, part of what makes this work so amazingly satisfying and wonderful. You follow that?
I do. There is nothing but this work, ultimately. I mean, think about it. I've always wondered. Every few years, somebody comes up with some type of, well, let's call it a political solution to the world's problems, to the, call it the Four Horsemen. They still ride, you know, the way they did 10,000 years ago and 5,000 years ago and 3,000 years ago. I was listening to the presidential candidates. It's all such crap. It's another personal agenda. It's another attempt at manipulating what is. Of course, we have no power to do so. We're essentially not even here. It's almost as if non-entities are describing non-methods for resolving non-problems. And now I'm starting to sound really nuts, but that's how it seems to me. What do you think?
I think you're right, and I don't think we need to think about it either. Yes, you're right, but it's beside the point, and you see that too. I know you see that, and I'm not trying to correct you or instruct you or anything. But of course you're right. It's the whole show is as somebody who is, of course, much more eloquent than I once said, is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. So, but it is also wonderful beyond comprehension, this creation, this uprising of reality's need to see itself. So, I'm happy to speak with you. Anything else?
Yeah, I'm thrilled to speak with you. I had the thought that one of the reasons Shakespeare is so eternally appreciated, and it doesn't matter where or when it's brought up, he probably saw things in precisely this same way, which was what accounts for his profound influence. In any event, I've said everything I want to say. I'm going to listen to others now. I love you, John. It's been years, but something got to me here, so let me listen to the rest. You take care.
You're very welcome, Don. It's my great pleasure. You too. Take care. Bye. Who else? Anybody?
Ronnie calling from Montreal.
Hi, Ronnie.
Hi, John. Just a small example of how the Vichara is working. I feel less and less nervous or fearful about talking to you. And it's a simple thing, but it's kind of like just accepting that we can talk about this in a very ordinary way. And it's not... anyway, whatever. Also, I wanted to mention, I did this group where for 5 days we look at how we identify with all of the things that we think we are, like I could be mother, grandmother, all of these things. And as you do the group, you kind of strip away the layers of who you think you are, and this goes over 5 days. To a place where I enter into the space of just emptiness or the witness, you know, seeing that it's all, like you say too, about identity. But then when I listened to a talk, I didn't quite understand the difference between, it's not a question of misidentification, but the real issue is of, thinking we are this life. So, you know, I'm asking, do I turn my attention more towards just looking at the self, as you say, or when these identities come up, it kind of leads me to the same thing. So I'm kind of switching my way of practicing here. And so could you just clear that up, what the difference is? Thank you.
I'll do my best. You know, first of all, you said how the effect of the vichara shows up in simple things like not being fearful about talking to me and so forth. The truth is that everything is simple things. The vichara is always simple things. The easing, the diminishment, the snuffing out of the fearfulness produces only simple results in our simple lives. But those simple results are at the heart of the matter. Regarding this whole thing about misidentification and the practice that is called in India, it's called neti neti. It's pretty much the same thing from what you described. It is however it's done in detail, you know, in the particulars of the way that it's conducted. The principle behind it is that I will look at what arises, see that it is not me, and reject it as not me, which neti neti means not that, not that, not that. And the problem with such a practice, I mean, the fact is that there's no practice whatsoever anywhere to be found that is going to produce in you freedom and liberation. No practice. The vichara doesn't produce freedom. The vichara merely snuffs out fear. Vichara doesn't produce anything. And no practice whatsoever is going to produce freedom. Freedom is either eternal and here, or it's a made-up concept that we use to beat ourselves up when we feel like we're not free. But the problem, even on its own terms, with a practice that seeks to kind of educate ourselves to the falseness in our identification with different personal structures or different characteristics and or so forth, the problem with identifying what it is I am not is that there is literally no end to what I am not in this sense. There is the project, the engine of the construction of the personal structure is infinite. You know, I am not my little finger. Oh, well, but I might be my thumb. Kind of like that. I am not this body, but I might be this mind. Or kind of like that. Or I am not the person who blew up on the freeway at the idiot that cut me off, but I might be the person who is sweet and kind and easy to get along with on the freeway and so forth. There's no end to what you're not. There's no end to the possible things that can be thrown up as offered as possibilities for you to accept and embrace as an adequate representation of you. First of all, the other thing is that this practice of trying to see what it is that you are falsely identified with is the same practice, a new or a different aspect of the same practice that has been going on since the moment of birth, which is the practice of trying to develop, construct, maintain, improve, enhance, and make good the personality, the personal structure, the persona, the my face. It's like Botox, all of these practices. Now, good thing is that none of these things can hurt you. Doing neti neti practice can't hurt you, and it's, you know, it's a way to pass the time, and we have a lot of time. But they can't help you either. In fact, the vichara can't help you. Nothing you do is helpful to you. Nothing you do is hurtful to you. Misidentification cannot be the problem. It's not the fact that I am identified with this body that causes the problem. It may be closer to the point to say that the belief that I am identified with this body is false, but even that doesn't cut to the bone the way the vichara does, because the fact that I'm identified with this body doesn't mean that there's something better or more true or more in keeping with reality that I can be identified with. And of course, Ronnie, we are misidentified every day, many times, constantly taking on and discarding new identities as the need arises. And if that's a problem, then we just have to become, I guess, hermits and stay away from the world, because every time I speak to somebody, I am taking on an identity that certainly cannot possibly contain the reality of me, but it is a useful tool. It's a useful skill in getting through life, in being useful in life, and so forth. When I'm driving the car, I take on the identity of a driver. When I'm a passenger in the car, I take on the identity of a passenger. When I am working to keep track of the finances of the foundation that supports this work, I am taking on the identity of somebody working on financial issues and so forth. Now, none of those faces in any way have any possibility of, or any hope of, adequately representing the reality of what I am, but the only time they hurt is when I think they do. Is when I have deep-seated and absolutely unseen, unconscious certainty that this identity that I am now putting on in this circumstance is me, and it therefore must be good, it must be true, it must be right. But if I'm done with that, then how can misidentification hurt? How can it be any problem at all? How can any of this be any problem at all? If the truth is that I am what I already know myself to be, which is this very, very simple, never missing, never absent, never changing, underlying, ordinary, here-ness, me-ness, that's the same always. The purpose of the vichara is not ever to determine what should stay and what should go in the mind, in the personality. The purpose of the vichara is not to give us a new tool and a new skill so that we can more effectively transform our lives and the shape and structure of our lives into that which is satisfactory and satisfying and fulfilling. The purpose of the vichara is to snuff out the underlying fear that drives me to think that that's what I must do. And the vichara, the entry into the vichara, the recognition of the vichara, the looking at you, that is the active work of the vichara, looking at you simply, easily, is the only thing that does that, that snuffs out that fear. And when that fear is gone, and it will go, Ronnie, I promise, and you've started it and it won't let you go. And when that fear is gone, then the whole idea of being concerned about what identity I am using in this moment to conduct my life or to sit and listen to music or any of the myriad other things that I might do, the idea that I should be concerned about what that looks like and what it's doing and what it's thinking is just not even comprehensible when the fear is gone. Do you follow that?
Yes. I've been laughing all along. So true. My experience when I did this kind of group over several days was often, as they call it, satori, where you know, I'm in this empty space, and then there's laughter. I just laugh, you know. That's always been the place where it connects for me. And actually, when Ramana said, you know, you'll laugh, it's kind of like the same thing, but I was attached to this, that identity somehow of that's what I would become, you know, somehow eternal laughter and seeing the joke at all times. And the truth is that I don't, you know, that does pass. And that's what, how I found you was that statement, you know, that all of that is passing too, and that the vichara is continuing, you know, and it's brought me to this which is much more relaxing, much more true, you know, just true. That's all there is to it. And so sometimes I laugh and sometimes I cry, and I just, it's all okay. And I don't have, like you say, I don't need to be concerned about whatever my mind's throwing up to be identified with, you know, one way or another. So thank you. That really cleared that up for me. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. I see you see things clearly, and I'm happy to see that. The thing is, everybody, that the whole show is about identity. The whole madness is about identity. All of suffering is about identity. All the fear is about identity. Really, all of it. The suffering, the misery, the fearfulness, the endless effort, the endless trying to fix things, trying to transform things, trying to become something, trying to be not become something. It's all identity. The issue is always identity, which is particularly incomprehensible when it's realized that you are identity itself. It is you who bestows identity on all things. It is you who bestows identity on the personal structure in the shape that it's in the moment that you believe it to be yourself. It is you that bestows that identity on it. These things exist. They come and go. They live and move in your being. All of them come and go. Satori, not satori, laughter, crying, stupidity, clarity, the whole show comes and goes in you. Every bit of it has identity bestowed upon it by you. You're the source of it all. And it is looking at that simple, and you know, you talk about it in these highfalutin kind of I'm trying to think of an adjective. Anyway, and all these highfalutin
laughter.
Spiritual terms. Huh?
Laughter.
What?
I'm laughing.
Now I don't remember what I was going to say, but it's okay. You're the source of it all. It's much simpler than all of that stuff about what I just said. It's just you. You're the source of identity. You are identity. There's nothing to you but identity. And where you put that, where you project that, is beside the point. If you look at you, the fear will go. That's the truth. Everything else is commentary. Everything I say is commentary. And in context, and has meaning in context, no meaning out of context. Everything I say. The only thing that matters is to look at you. If you look at you, everything will be clear. You'll see everything clearly. And you will maybe not be quite as bad as I am at trying to say anything about it, but you will, like me, stammer and stutter when you try to speak about something so simple with a tool like language that is so cripplingly complicated. Okay?
Yes. Thank you. Wow. Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Anybody else want to talk? It's okay if you don't, but it's okay if you do, too. Okay, then we might as well all go find something else to do for the rest of the day, or morning, or night. Or I look at the amazing mix of countries here. We are all over the globe, and probably there are people here from every time. So I don't, from night, morning, afternoon, all of that stuff. I'm happy to see you. I'm so happy to be with you. I'm so happy that you gather with me in the intent to consider together the wonder of this of this. Really is nothing to do, you see, except to look. The whole reason that these creatures arise, the whole force that gives life to these creatures and this creation itself is this requirement within reality that it look at itself. That's the nature of reality, is looking at itself. And in this is a force that gives rise to all of creation, gives rise to stars and planets and big bangs and dark matter and you and me and my cat and the bottle of sparkling water here, this vichara. It is the force that moves things and causes time to unfold, this vichara, this self looking at self, not true self, not big self, not little self, just you, always you, looking at yourself. And the fact is, it seems to me what I see more and more clearly is that the arising of consciousness in this reality, the arising of consciousness, conscious of itself within this reality, is an evolutionary process. It is one of the ways in which this force has created the ground in which it can look at itself, this consciousness that has spontaneously arisen, and then evolved, always changing, always trying, failing, changing, always driven by the same need, the same force, the same clear, open-eyed wonder of looking at you. This consciousness, looking at you. And I see very clearly how this radical arising of the insight of Ramana Maharshi, which actually turned everything on its head. I mean, it is not part and parcel of any spiritual realm whatsoever. It has no interest in spiritual teachings. It has no interest in religious beliefs. It has no interest in political beliefs. It has no interest in social beliefs. It has no interest in any of its, of the particulars of its production, of its display, of its creation. It is interest only in you. Only in you and in the myriad and uncountable ways in which you display yourself. This vichara. And many, many people over the years, many people over the 10,000 years, 12,000 years, however long it has been that consciousness has been conscious of itself in human creatures, many people have stumbled upon the reality. And probably many, many more than we can imagine, because probably most make nothing of it. The fear is not here. Life is wondrous beyond belief. What's to be made of that? What's the big deal, really? But some have fallen into this in a circumstance, a context in which it is reveals itself consciously in a way that can be articulated and arises along with the desire to show itself to all creatures, and in particular all human creatures. And those who have stumbled upon it try, with the tools that they have at hand, to say something useful and something helpful and something encouraging about reality and about human life and about human suffering and about human wonder to other human beings. And all have failed. No one has succeeded. Not the Buddha, not Jesus, not Padmasambhava, not Nisargadatta, not anyone has succeeded. But all have tried with the tools and the skill that they had to hand, with the vocabulary and the acculturation and the personal structure that they have at hand. All have tried to say something useful and encouraging to the rest of us. Fear not. Fear not. All is well. And all have failed. And with each turning of this wheel, as it's sometimes called, with each turning of this wheel, with each new cycle of the appearance of the naked vichara within human life, the appearance of the reality of the simplicity of freedom and happiness and wonder that's available to all human beings. It's not only available, it's here, and deliberately overlooked, deliberately turned a blind eye to, out of fear. As the wheel turns again, it is that maybe sometimes it is seen more clearly, and the skills and the tools and the vocabulary and the education and so forth, which themselves draw upon all that has gone before, have evolved, along with consciousness itself, have evolved in a way that it makes it possible to make this offer, to present this great good news in a way that can be heard by ordinary people like you and me, that can be heard in such a way that ordinary people like you and me, with ordinary skills and ordinary understanding and an ordinary misery in life, can hear what's being offered. Just look at yourself. Just look. Look at you. Look at you. Can hear that, not in the words, but in the actuality that the words seek to convey. And maybe this time, you know, now we can talk to each other. We can talk. Here we are. We're talking to Sweden and Ireland and the Netherlands and North Carolina and Spain and Brazil and Norway and everywhere. We can speak to each other and we can say, wait a minute. Yes, all of that, all of the highfalutin spiritual castles that we have built, all of that is very wonderful and very beautiful, but what has it gotten us? Can't get us anything. Can't take anything away from us. Look at you. If you look at you, whenever you can, lightheartedly, without a chain being wrapped around you. If you look at you as often as you can, everything will come clear. Fear will depart. Life will reveal itself to be the absolute magnificence and rich, deep, fragrant, textured wonder that it is. So, thank you for being, and thank you for being here with me. I love you all more than I can ever say. I am grateful to you beyond any words can express. I'm grateful for your help and your support and your willingness to listen to me and speak to me and have this conversation with me and inform me and instruct me and help this work evolve so it becomes more effective. As I speak to you, every time I speak to you, maybe not every time because I got a lot of shortcomings. But often when I speak with you, my expression clarifies. And the next person I speak to hears it more clearly. So thank you so much. I love you. Carla wants to speak with you for a minute, and I will see you everywhere, and I will see you when I see you.